Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery. Code Wondery.
It's 3 o'clock somewhere. Time for a My Mochi ice cream snack. My Mochi ice cream is cool, creamy scoops of premium ice cream wrapped in sweet, pillowy dough. And get this, all of My Mochi's fabulous flavors like strawberry, mango, double chocolate, and cookies and cream are only around 80 calories per piece. Talk about a guilt-free, indulgent experience. Each box of My Mochi ice cream has 6 perfectly portioned, gluten-free mochis that are great for grab-and-go. So feel good while curbing your afternoon cravings or the midnight munchies. Yeah, you know who you are with the joyfully chill sensation of My Mochi ice cream. Find My Mochi ice cream at Target or visit MyMochi.com to locate a grocery store near you.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast, number 630. Jonah, a very fun 5-year anniversary show last night.
That was a blast. I was very pleased with the turnout. The crowd was great. It was weird being at eye level. We were just sitting
We've never done anything special for an anniversary show before.
No, we haven't.
So it was kind of a last minute thing. Like, why don't we just do something at Meltdown?
Yeah, and it felt right. It felt really good. And it was like, you know, like it was neat recognizing a bunch of people. And, you know, Jackie Dan, the guy who did animation for us years ago.
Yep. Or,
you know, he was there. Just people that have, like, found the Meltdown show and became regulars at the Meltdown show that found that show because of the podcast. You know,
it was really fun. It was really, really, really fun. And I'm glad that we got to do it. And I announced this in the show, but this, just so you guys know, the way that the intros work is, you know, we have our sponsors in the intro. It's what keeps the podcast free flowing and allows us to keep giving them out. And so it really is just, you know, roughly 5 minutes or so at the beginning of each episode, if you can just hang with us. But what I've realized is, and I don't know why it took me 5 years to realize this, you know, because we always promote our own shit at the top of the podcast, and it occurred to me, like, well, hey, there are probably individuals who have fun things that they would like to share, you know, like, if you art or a website or a movie that they, you know, like a little, not if you're a film company, but if you're a person, you know, you make, but it just kind of maybe a fun way for people to kind of share. We can share people's stuff with our community. So we created an email, which is events@nerdist.com. Just send us events. If there's like a, you know, like a local art fair in your town or like a little, you know, the small town Comic-Con going on or whatever, or you're putting on something, or you're, you know, or you have a stand-up show in your town and you want people to know about it, you know, like, let us know.
Think of it as a community bulletin board.
It is exactly a community bulletin board outside of a grocery store.
Yes, yeah,
just
exactly.
Like a cool local, you know, mom-and-pop grocery store where there's like a cork board and then it's like babysitting, you know, piano lessons.
You're making a flyer, putting it up there, but it's an audio version of such.
Yeah, audio flyers.
Audio flyers.
So I have to get that URL. Jonah, we have to monetize that. So, yeah, events@nerdist.com. Share that with us if you want to.
Yeah, and you should.
What do you, now that we're promoting stuff, what do you have anything?
When does it go up? Friday?
So it goes up tomorrow.
Oh, this goes up tomorrow?
Yeah.
Well, this weekend, I'll be doing San Francisco Sketch Fest with the Meltdown, with Kumail. You know, we have a good lineup.
Well, wait a minute, Jonah. Does that mean that you'll be returning the following weekend to join us for the Nerdist Podcast?
That means that following weekend, I'll be going to do the... I leave San Francisco to go to New Orleans to shoot a pilot, fly from New Orleans back to San Francisco for the Nerdist show. I got an early flight.
Yep.
I saw you start to tense up. I got an early flight that day. I'm beginning in first thing in the day. And then on Saturday I have a live Jonah Radio with guest Paul Myers, musician and music writer and brother of Mike Myers.
Yep.
And the band is looking like it's going to be Shannon and the Clams from the label Hardly Art. So I'm very looking forward to that.
Yeah, you got a nice little packed schedule there.
Yeah, and then like in 3 things on Sunday and then back on Monday.
Who are you, me?
I wouldn't even want to do such a thing. You have a hard enough time with it.
That was stupid.
That's so, like, become our go-to bit is the two guys talking at the same time.
Two guys talking at the same time.
It's like you start to go and I go. We did I'm at midnight. We've done it a few times on this thing, and it's really funny when you. It's because it's like you're always going at it, and I'm always going at it, but we're kind of also agreeing. So it's not really an argument at the same time as it is just two guys saying the same thing. Same.
So this Nerds podcast is Cold War Kids, and those guys were super fucking awesome.
Solid dudes. Great pipes on that
so
guy.
So nice. Nathan Willett and Matt Most were there with us. We went to SIR Studios in Hollywood to record this. So very nice. SIR Studios, it turns out, listen to the podcast. And they're like, anytime you want to come, you know, like do live podcasts here. Because Swing House moved out of the neighborhood. We had never been to SIR. And now I'm thrilled that we went there because it was a phenomenal experience. They were really, I'm not just trying to do a commercial for SIR. They were a fantastic group.
It's a really cool place. Really nice stuff.
Great facility. Yeah. And so Cold War Kids played a couple songs. Matt Schwartz played with them for the songs. He'd not sit in on the podcast. He sat and watched the podcast, but he wasn't actually at the table. And Nathan and Matt, just good, cool, chill dudes. Cold War Kids promoting their new album, Hold My Home, which is out now. And it was super fun. And they performed. They did two songs at the end. I'm asking Katie because they did two songs before we did the interview, so I just didn't know. This is just too much behind the curtain shit. Don't worry about it.
You think?
This nerd. You shut your mouth right now, Jonah. Don't you talk to me like that in front of company.
You me
I'm here trying to do a show.
Your checks and balances is what this country was based
who are
off of.
Clam bands.
The person?
What's a clam band?
Clam Shannon in the clam.
Clam rock now.
Yeah, no, right. Clam, yeah, that's the whole thing. It's a whole genre.
Clam bikinis.
Because you're old and you don't know what's going on in popular culture. The ones I know.
Stop. Nerds Podcast number 630.
Cold War Kids. Coming up on Nerds Podcast 630, counting down Cold War Kids.
Hey, Jonah, that's my line. I tried to say that as cringy as possible.
If they didn't turn it off when we were talking over each other.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Right before we started recording, you started talking. First of all, what was the podcast you said? Song Exploder?
Song Exploder.
Song Exploder.
I've not heard Song Exploder, but they basically break down just theme songs or just songs in general?
They got baths, books, stars, policia, a bunch of bands.
So we were talking, that led us into a conversation about TV theme songs, and I was almost able to get you guys to play the Mr. Belvedere theme. But
it got too complex.
Then we discovered that the Mr. Belvedere theme is surprisingly complex.
Yeah.
More than you think it's going to be. Because it's that Leon Redbone, like New Orleans jazz.
Yeah.
And if we did it, it would go number one. So we don't want to do that.
You don't want to do that at all.
We don't want to be known for that.
No.
Yeah.
It'd be like the new Alien Ant Farm.
We could turn a couple people. Yeah, we don't want a revolution like that.
You don't accidentally want to have a theme song be a giant hit song.
We want it to be an original that really breaks us through.
You have to make a song that sounds like a TV theme song, i.e. Days of the Week by Stone Temple Pilots. It sounds like the theme song to a TGIF song, a show.
Which one?
I don't know. I just heard it on the radio.
How does that one go? How's it go?
I was like, Monday comes back again. She's ready to go. No, for tomorrow. Something like that.
That late STP?
It's, it must have come out in the late 90s. But I heard it on the radio, and I thought it was the theme song to a show I'd never seen.
That's so funny.
And then, but you listen to it, and it's just like you see it all in your head. Like, you know, you see someone trying to get in a door, dropping their keys, looking at the camera, going, oh, this is my character.
Yeah, Scott Weiland was in a show, Step by Step.
Because
he had a lot of struggles with abuses.
There's a hole in my arm. But
terrible. Why would I make fun of him for that? Why would I make fun of that?
Seems like a piece of shit. I don't know.
No, he does not seem like a piece of shit at all.
Seems like a perfect guy. Right?
He used to hang. There was this karaoke bar we used to like to go to in Burbank. And
he sounds like a good guy.
No, well, hey, you know, why? Put the claws back, Wolverine. But then we got into theme songs, and then I agreed with you, the True Detective theme. I watched every episode of that. I watched the full title credits.
So vibey. Me too. I watched we flew back from Australia like a week ago, and I watched every every show, right, like straight through.
He watched eight in a row.
Eight in a row.
He was crazy. He was crazed watching out.
Yeah, I would watch an episode, get a drink, go to the bathroom, watch an episode, and I didn't sleep at all. And I followed up with some Fargo, but I mean, how about
eight episodes is a great a number of shows. Like it's because you can.
But with
you
that show, that eighth episode, probably six, seven, eight. I was watching them by myself late at night, and I think I'm more prone to getting freaked out by stuff, but that show, I mean, it was like powerful and dark, and but in a lot of people are like, really, you got scared, and I was like, nothing could be scarier than that show to me. Like that's the most like real and yet dark, like real life fear and
well, see,
yet...
I liked it a lot.
Oh, everyone loved it. Everyone, I adore it.
See, everyone's built the show up so much to me, and
is that
it
why
was
you
also what
is that why you waited.
Yeah, to let to. So
well, no,
I could,
just to get away from all the fanfare because everybody.
I just waited
about.
Because of time. Like I didn't have time, and then I started my tour this past weekend, and so then I found myself with like a couple extra hours here and there, like in hotels and on planes and stuff. And so I finally watched it. But my expectations were so high, and there were two things sort of bummed me out. I really thought there was going to be some sort of a supernatural element woven in. Like I kept thinking like, oh, so they're going to uncover something occulty, and then there's going to be some weird devil shit that's going to happen.
Yeah.
And I thought it was going to tie into his like visions that he had, and that
there's
never paid off.
There's
still
a lot
good,
to try to tie in, but there was some magical stuff that happened in that weird in the weird.
But I thought that was just his crazy like
that's,
drug.
That's his flashbacks. Yeah.
His weird
callers,
flashbacks.
Callers, can we confirm or deny that? That's for sure.
There's an episode. I watched them all. Straight. He's in the car and he's singing Colors of the Sky.
Okay.
Because he was on that. He was on some drug like before. Like it's like a backstory thing. I don't know what.
I thought he was going to end up being like the conduit to, or I thought it was going to be like an Angel Heart thing where it's like, no, you're the guy that we've been searching for, and your brain got fucked up. There were just like a couple maybe unintentional red herrings, but I thought the whole like drug thing when he was undercover was going to play out. But it was still a good show, you guys. It was still a great show watching him acting away up there.
Handsome family.
Oh, so good. Great. And that's a very difficult register vocally to maintain that. When the land is
registered. Even that band's story is really crazy, too, and real depressing.
Well, like, I don't know anything about them.
Yeah, it's a husband and wife, and the guy had a brain injury, and it's a whole kind of thing. I don't know the details, so I won't go too much into it. But it's like when you read about them, it's like a real weird, depressing story.
Yeah. The music on that show is great. Like all the end credit music is fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, so it's
like the different like old songs they pull in, and then T-Bone's stuff.
Like Grinderman's on one of them, I think. Black Angels. Like the first episode is Black Angels at the very end, and then Grinderman. That Honey Bee Let's Fly to Mars is on there.
Wow,
it's just so good.
That Lungs, the song. I think the Cowboys Junkies covered it. What's the band? God damn it. I just downloaded it. Well, it's not important. You go look it up on the internet. You don't have to hear it right here.
The all-new True Detective is going to be rad, I think.
When's that start?
Colin Farrell and is it Denzel?
Yeah, and I read something about it. It's like occult history of the freeways. That's what.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Did they already cover that with Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Yep, they really did.
Yeah.
Yeah, they really
someone
they got
said
it
that.
Down. Now, that's going to be amazing if the reveal at the end of True Detective is Christopher Lloyd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When I killed your brother, Denzel, I talked just like this.
He's only ever killing people's brothers.
He only kills people's brothers. Yeah. That movie completely holds up.
Yeah.
1,000,010%.
I watched that last year.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Is that what you're doing on when you're touring? Are you taking a tour? Are you doing a tour bus? The tour starts a couple of days.
Tomorrow,
doing tour
Wednesday.
We'll be in a bus. Yeah. Yeah. Most uses that Handbrake app to rip DVDs, you know, because if you want to rely strictly on streaming, then you can have a lot of dead zones in your life of being real bored.
But I buy it before I pirate
it. You might have to resort to
buying it. I pirate it.
That's a good way to do it. That is a great, if that's not a term, that should be a term. You buy it so you're giving the money, but then you have to be able to consume it the way that your device can consume
and
it.
And all my dogs plug it into my computer and they get all the stuff.
Pirate!
It goes times 10.
I just ripped every Seinfeld for a sound guy. He's 25 years old, and he's just now starting Seinfeld. And I'm so happy because now I have like a new kind of relationship with him.
Does
you know,
it seem exciting to him?
Yeah, it is.
I was thinking about this the other day.
Is it 290s?
Yeah, maybe not even 290s, but like so, like they changed the way TV comedy was. Though, like so now, like everyone's sarcastic on TV.
Yeah.
Everyone's the funniest person ever on TV. And I wonder if, like, I was watching it the other day. I was like, does a kid realize that this is where it started? with that, like the, a lot of the elements from this show.
I'll let you know in like in a month.
People were watching him on crazy, television yeah. before Seinfeld. That wasn't the...
No, but it changed TV. You can't deny that.
No, well, it definitely changed the way sitcoms were done. Yeah. And I guess ultimately, good stories are good stories. Like good comedies, you know, like if it's really, really good, it should be pretty timeless.
Yeah.
But there's some ones where you go back and you're like, whoa, like like other shows.
Yeah.
That you thought were really amazing.
Grace Under Fire doesn't hold up.
What?
No.
That's crazy.
Coach doesn't hold up.
Coach does not hold up?
No, I watched like episode
that theme song, though. That's a good theme song.
Yeah, that is good.
Which, is that just like the college football
theme? The football, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Bah, 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 bah. That's the only thing I know about college football music. So where does your tour start?
Denver.
That's going to be Denver. Wednesday?
Wednesday night. Yeah.
Holy shit. I'm playing
the Ogden.
Saturday. Yeah, at the Ogden?
Yeah. Yeah.
Where is...
It's in a grim part of town. I remember this venue. It's like in that really like long strip where there's not a restaurant for
real
miles.
College-y? No, I must be. Am I thinking of the right one?
You're thinking of. I don't know, but Ogden's like there's nothing in the area. There's a thrift store across the street.
Oh, okay.
And they spent a lot of money at last time.
Okay.
I was starting Thrift Shop. Were you guys?
I don't know if that is Thrift Shop.
That was exactly how Thrift Shop starts, Jonah. Right? It's a crazy little horn sound. It's not. I'm not crazy. A lot of people heard that song. Like, I know that's how it starts, right?
I don't think anyone picked up.
Anyone? Fuck. I'm positive. So anyway, you're popping tags, and you're in Denver. Denver's a good town.
It's going to be cold.
It's going to be very cold, but it's going to be sunny all week, so you don't have to worry about that.
Did you check this all before going out there?
I always check, because I'm terrified because you're busing it, but when you're flying, you have to know if there's a storm so that you can start preparing, and if in case there is a snowstorm, then you have to, a couple days out, keep an eye on it, because you might have to cancel.
True.
So yeah, I've been keeping an eye out.
Last time we were in Colorado, we hit an elk.
What?
Oh, shit.
And I slept through the
depressing.
Whole thing.
Do you mean the animal or an old guy in a sofa club?
I got off the bus in the morning, and I saw like the mangled, like, it was kind of broken windshield and this, and what happened? And our tour manager was like, you didn't get awake, like, wake up for that?
Like, no. That's like hitting a car.
It was, yeah.
You were around for it.
I woke up, and everyone was checking it out, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, my buddy.
Did you demolish the elk? Did the bus demolish the elk?
Yeah.
But I had no idea. Sleeping.
You know what you got to do is you got to take the horns and put them on the front of the bus.
Chop up the meat. Yeah. Save it.
Stop. Have some elk steaks.
Some friends of mine were on tour in a van, and elk ran in front of them and just like totaled the van.
Really?
Completely easily.
Yeah.
And then the elk dragged the guys out of the car and beat the shit out of them.
Yeah.
Because they're fucking tough customers. Yeah, you have to be the size of a tour bus to take down an elk.
That's gnarly.
So you start in Denver, and then how long is this tour? Are you basically on tour for the rest of the year?
A few months.
Off and on for a few months. A lot of shows.
This first tour, I counted the days because I needed to know how many T-shirts to bring.
Yeah.
20 days.
Okay,
I'll bring 10 T-shirts, do laundry halfway through, and then...
Yeah. Very smart.
Yeah. But yeah, it's 3 weeks.
So what does a Cold War Kids tour bus look like? What populates the inside...
There's always a mirror on the ceiling, like in the lobby area.
Yeah.
Always.
Waterbed, right? Yeah. Lava lamps.
It's me in the back with a waterbed, and everybody else has like...
just grabbed in front.
Hey, lead singer, gets the back. You know, I have to remind him every time. And
that flies, right? They're totally like, oh, yeah, that's
fine. Yeah. You know.
The back of the bus is the worst part.
I find all the places to hoard stuff, because I buy a lot of shit on tour, and he buys some stuff. I buy a lot of stuff, like weird art prints and stuff, and I find all a place to hide it, and there's a lot of I've left stuff on the bus too.
You have to bring an extra empty suitcase to carry all the shit
I usually do.
It's a weird life. The thing I need to do tomorrow is go buy some new slippers, because you know, you just walking around, it's very easy to start walking around. You walk into a bathroom, sticky.
Are you gonna get 3 a.m. theme sticker, like slippers, like
a theme sticker,
bears or sharks?
No, I don't wear funny clothes.
Sure. No, you rabbit. How about rabbit slippers?
No,
does that sweeten the pot?
No.
The floor is sticky, but you know, I mean, you guys are basically family, so it's fine, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Little Corvette slippers or something? Corvette cars?
No. I like it. Yeah, plain. Just some black slippers.
Nothing funny. Nothing funny about the clothes.
Okay, how about you just hollow out two small nurse sharks, like real sharks? Is that too cute or is that fucking awesome?
too cute for me. Yeah.
Man.
I want, yeah, yeah.
I'll get you some True Detective slippers, like whatever that looks like. I don't know.
It should be the two guys.
Yeah. Yeah. New guys, the new guys.
Me and my wife were a True Detective for Halloween.
Oh, you were?
Yeah, yeah.
Who were you? Were you Harrelson and she was
No, she really wanted to wear a bald cap.
Oh.
Because she was deciding. She's like, do I want to wear a bald cap or have a mustache? And I said, well, I already have this long hair wig, so I'll just play Woody. And so she, like, just put on a bald cap and put a pillow inside of her body.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did great. Not know that's what that picture was. I saw that.
Really, I found a big hug mug.
I've actually been told since I was in when I was in seventh grade on the basketball court before school one day, a kid came up to me and said, "You look like Woody Harrelson." And I've got it probably once a year since then.
People tweet it. I look at the tweeter and people still say like, that singer looks like Woody Harrelson.
I don't know. I don't know how canny that resemblance is.
You look
like
Cheers
era
him.
It's kind
of
neither a compliment or an insult. It's nice. He's a great guy.
This kind of white guy racism has been going on. We need to stop. Erase the hate, guys. Not all white guys look like Woody Harrelson. Generic.
I get Moby all the time. And I changed my glasses 2 days ago.
Moby and Woody.
I had the exact same glasses as Moby pretty much, and I changed them up.
We watched the Woody Harrelson, Matthew McConaughey surf comedy. What was that one called?
Oh, what's it called?
Surfer Dude?
Yeah. Surfer Dude,
Surfer Dude.
And
we watched Willie Nelson,
that, and then we had a long-running joke while we were recording this record, actually, that, like,
the movie's insane.
Both of those guys were in a place where they're not sure where their life is going, their career is going, and we had this joke that it was McConaughey has this beautiful wife, and during one of his speeches, he was like, "It's my wife every day. She told me, get out there, go get it," you know, and you're like,
Call Woody, do a show.
And then and you just picture him like, "I'm tired," and she, "Get out there." So then we had this joke that, like, you know, it was during, like, that movie, in between that movie and True Detective, that McConaughey was talking to his wife, and he was like, what am I going to do next? And she was like, call Woody. You got to call Woody. He's always got something going. He's got something good going. You guys are great together. Call Woody.
I'm surprised.
Call Woody.
Someone's basically got to take the True Detective opening and then put it in front of footage from that movie and then just drop some of the score in.
I'm surprised that hasn't happened.
I'm sure it must have happened at some point.
I want to find a photo.
I always get while you're looking that up. I am cut from the same white guy template as Aaron Paul, Charlie Day, and Matt Bellamy from Muse. We're all in the same type of white guy.
Like, I guess the Muse one.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
It's like Muse.
It's your hair.
It is the hair. Yeah. Is the hair a little bit?
Mm-hmm.
Muse is good to listen to if you're driving late at night through a tunnel. Like, there's something about that kind of, like, oh, it's building to a crescendo.
Or summoning an army of teenagers.
Summoning a bunch of teenagers to come and carry you through a tunnel.
We toured those guys one time.
How was it?
We did, like, five shows, but it was, like, kind of pretty early for us when we were still, like,
10 shows. Like,
we were still, like, this is weird.
Yeah.
You know, we were still, like, 100% like, indie enough to be, like, this is weird.
And I think why it was weird is, like, they were, like, such a huge band that watching their production is almost as exciting as watching them play. Like, watching the guy do the lights is like watching a rock star, you know, just do the lights.
It's
full-on. It's crazy.
But
it's amazing. We did Madison Square Garden with him.
Holy shit.
Insane. Oh,
wow. Yeah, but now that you're Cold War men, you probably recognize... Fuck you, Jonah.
I liked it.
No, you kind of like shrugged a little bit. Like, I get it. Was not a great joke.
It was a smile.
No,
it was a smile with my shoulders.
It was a smile like you would smile at your mom for trying to be edgy. But now that you understand the economics of touring and you see a production like that, then do you just kind of go like, how the fuck do you do that?
Yeah, well, and like nobody had that idea for them. You know, they were like, it's got to be this, it's got to be lights, or you know, just like they dreamed it up and it's totally theirs. And yeah, that you respect it.
Do you have you ever thought like, oh, maybe we should put more giant production elements in the show? Are you like, oh, you don't want that to get in the way?
We are. Pretty, you know, minimal. I think that we walk the line between being like a very, I don't know, being a blue collar indie rock band and being larger a little bit than others, and that we have a little bit of production happening with this tour with some screens behind us that respond to the drums a little bit, and that'll be cool, but, you know, keep it minimal. And I like to, you know, the emphasis for a band our size especially should be on the performance and us playing, but Yeah, you know, it's a holistic question for how for a band our size, you know, you don't want to have too much happening in a smaller room. That the best thing that can happen is it's intimate and people are connecting with the songs and the performance. And if you have a lot of screens with a lot of business going on, you detract from that.
Don't you ever just one time want to come out like in full makeup, costumes, pyro, like, but still play the songs, but just like wrap this really surreal production around them just one time?
I've never wanted that. Moss, have you ever wanted that?
No.
We're pretty straight, you know, like that. You
Orange
know,
County boys.
Yeah. I mean, we love people that do that, you know, all those guys and girls that do that, you know, but I gotta wear what I'm wearing in the morning at breakfast, what I'm wearing at night.
It's like, very boring.
T-shirts
it's
and
tremendously
jeans.
Boring yeah. what Keep we are and what we do. Yeah, yeah. You know, you wear the same clothes to the show that you wore all day, and it's where do you go from there?
Yeah.
Did you grow up in Fullerton? Did I read that correctly?
We grew up in
I grew up like Ontario, Pomona, Claremont area, like way east, like 40
and I grew
miles.
Up some in Northern California, but then in Anaheim, and original guys were spread out through Orange County and San Diego. And we have two new guys. We have Lake Arrowhead, Seattle, and Portland guys.
Okay.
Now, mm-hmm. So it's we're all over. It's funny. But it's funny, we started kind of rehearsing in Fullerton at one point, moved to Long Beach, and were there for many, many years until we kind of all moved here to LA.
Kind of wherever someone lived and had maybe a room where he could make noise in, that's where he practiced at. And so right. I think people started thinking, oh, they're from Fullerton, they're from Long Beach, they're from Whittier, but like kind of from all of them, yeah.
Yeah.
Just kind of wherever.
What was the scene, though, that you guys were coming up in, like, was it the Coos Cafe?
Yeah, that was when I was younger. I mean, I feel like before we knew each other.
I went there a lot, like when I was in college. And
yeah, the original.
But we never played there.
It was
I don't
in
think.
Santa Ana, then it moved to Long Beach, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we had a weird time where when we kind of first got together, there was like the Hub in Fullerton. Mm-hmm. I was just thinking about this because we. Being from Orange County in the time that we were and the age that we were when we were a little older, when we started being 24, 25 or something, there just wasn't anything cool that we immediately identified with living in Long Beach, living in Whittier. We went to a small college called Biola where it was a strange scene of a very small school and like a Christian school, but all these like artist kids that were – I think that there was, and we were kind of in between LA and Orange County. There's a lot of like, we didn't identify with anything happening. There was nothing cool about Fullerton or Whittier or Long Beach, really. There wasn't really a scene that we were latching onto at all. So I think that we had a group of friends where nobody was really musicians that much, but that everybody was, you know, a lot of art going on. And that was the world we came from. And it's funny now because there's so much like, in Orange County and the Fullerton, there's this Burger Records. And our friend Daniel Mitchkoff's in Tijuana Panthers, and he's a little younger than us. And, you know, all the bands in that scene, it's like, it's huge and it's really cool to be from Orange County.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah, who would have
like
thought
Costa
cassette tapes
Mesa.
Were the ones that gonna... mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I mean, we just, I don't know if, you know, I guess in a way maybe that we're the generation before that. But I wish that we, you know, had been in a time where there was a ton of other bands like us, you know, and that we felt proud of where we were from, and that, you know, that we had a lot in common with other bands that we were playing with. But it really wasn't the case. I don't know. Yeah. And if I was really patting myself on the back, I'd say maybe we had, you know, we were maybe slightly opening the door for some of what's happening now. I think even from what I know about all these burger bands, it's like, they're surprised themselves that all this came out of Fullerton, but so we're lonely.
We started touring right away too. Like, I mean, within the first year, like a year of forming a band, we were like already on tour, like opening for bands or doing our headlining tour, and so we didn't have time to like have like a scene at home, other than doing like our residency nights, like at the Detroit bar, and like, you know, here in Silver Lake.
Can you only recognize a scene in retrospect, though, or can you recognize it as it's happening?
Yeah, I think you're right, in hindsight, it makes sense.
Because if you said, you know, in the '90s, I don't know. Maybe grunge is pretty well defined. I think it's the 2000s where someone's like, "What's the music of the 2000s?" I'm like, I don't know. I think it's because
the internet happened, and then like the scene is on the internet, and they're all in different cities,
yeah,
more or less. And so it's not so much in one city.
I just mean like a sound community. If I heard something and someone was like, "This is from 2001," I wouldn't know. I'd go, "Okay," but you know, if I hear 80s music, I know. Well, that's definitely 80s music.
Sure, yeah.
If I hear 90s music, oh, that's definitely 90s music. But I don't think I can identify anything from 01 to now as being, "Oh, that's from like." All of it to me just sounds like an oatmeal, just like a mash of. Mm-hmm.
I think it's just because you know about everything now. Before, like, you know, it's in the 80s, it's like, you know, what was on radio, and then there was like a bunch of other stuff that no one ever heard. So it was hard to say like what was the sound was whatever was like selling, as opposed to like, you know, now everything's so fractured that it's like, you know, it's hard to say what things sell more.
There were only so many delivery channels for things, so everything had to be like, everything's a mixtape now.
Yeah.
But then it was like, well, this is all this kind of station, this is all this kind of station, this is all this kind of station. Yeah. And there were like four of them.
Well, a joke I would do if like I was DJing a thing, and I played TV Party by Black Flag, and someone came up and said, "Can you play any 80s?" And I said, I am. this is an 80s song.
Such a just snobbish moment.
Ugh. Yeah.
You idiot.
I thought it was a funny joke that they would get.
Such a high fidelity.
Yeah.
You didn't do that so that someone would come up so that you could shame them?
No, I wanted everyone to dance at TV Party. It's a fun song.
What do you guys...
But then there's such a clear distinction between being... Like, I think people are much more default. I think we were, in a way, we started a band. We never were like, you're like, "What are we? We're an indie rock band. We're going to be an indie rock band." I think we were just like, "We're a band. We're going to play the music we play." And I remember, someone the first time saying like, "Hey, cool, you guys are like an indie rock band." I mean, like, are we? Okay.
Yeah, we liked The Clash and Nina Simone and Tom Waits, and we kind of just played our version of all that at the very beginning, and then it kind of became what it was.
Yeah. You guys got to also work with the producer that did Mule Variations, right?
Yeah.
The Tom Waits album?
Jakir King, yeah.
That's pretty fucking rad.
Yeah. He had some good stories about
T-Waits.
Like? Anything you can share?
He had this one about, he went at a campfire with Tom Waits and one of his sons, I think. And without any warning, he just goes into like the Zach, the DJ on Down by Law that he plays. Have you seen Down by Law?
No.
That Jarmusch film. Really, he just like without warning, he just starts being that character, and Jakir just thought it was hilarious. Like, it's funny if you've seen the movie, but yeah, that's one that.
Do you ever worry? Do you ever? I mean, because it's just like. Nice, normal dudes happen to be in a band. Uh-huh. Do you ever think, "Oh, it would have been really fun to be super crazy and fucked up on drugs and just like twisted and you know like store, you know, like as opposed to like, yeah, you know, like we responsibly show up for gigs, we're nice to people."
Yeah, I read that Alex James, the Blur bass player autobiography five years ago on tour now, and I've since now heard that like all the really juicy stuff is taken out, but I'm like, I would have loved to be that crazy, and I'll never be that crazy.
That's, I think about it a lot. It's a funny, like, I think part, there's a hundred reasons. I think maybe going to school first and maybe having regular jobs first, and I think you don't want to be an asshole to people because you know how much, you know how hard they're working. And,
sure.
But yeah, it's a really funny question. I think in some ways, in some ways it's also the idea of acting like a rock star, and that, I think we came from a time and place again, in kind of the Orange County thing, or like the No Doubts and Sublimes, and those were enormous selling artists that everybody knew. They came from the same place we came from, but you want to be. It's much less sexy and exciting to be different by being a nice person.
Right.
all artists have to be, in a way, by the narrowness of what they're. Trying to accomplish, you have to ignore and in a way be an asshole to people who are, you can't give everything to everyone, and I don't know, I think that in some ways it's much easier to be an asshole, you know, to just do what you want to do and be lost in the tour and the moment. And but then also it comes back to the thing of like, we've always had to be a very blue collar kind of band in the way that we, you know, we budget tours and we budget records and we would definitely not have been able to make 5 records in 8 years or something if we had been high and crazy and chasing everything along. And I think that's a, you know, I don't know if in a way I'd almost say I almost kind of knew that early on. Like, we been to college, you know how hard to be successful at anything, and that it is like the most, in a way, kind of unglamorous and boring to think of it that way. But then, you know, but we're still doing it, you know, and we still get to, at the end of the day, like writing songs, performing them and going on tour. That's what we do. Mm-hmm. And we're like, all the love has to come from that. Beyond that, like all the fun stuff that comes along with it, like you can get into, but like, you know, yeah.
Well, we only bought 1 bottle of wine. You
know? So that's
just
yeah.
This is crazy.
We're going to drive home after
a lot of water, one wine.
You know, we jam a Kano. Mm-hmm. Like their whole idea of just like, you know, just do the, it's your job, do the work.
You know, we didn't grow up like going to see the Minutemen, but you know, we like, you know, like pre-internet, of course, too. So the myth of bands like Fugazi and like, you know, the idea of like that kind of purity of intention of, not being rock star-y, not being like so, you know, I remember there's a line in the Fugazi documentary where Guy is saying like, oh God, here's our next record. Let me tell you why it's so much better than our last one. And that's what it means to go around being a musician and be so into yourself. And it's like, you know, that always stuck with me. I think, you know, to a certain extent, like being humble about it and recognizing this is who we are. We don't need to be everything. You know, we're talking about Scott Weiland earlier.
Yeah.
That's who you don't want
to
be.
You think about some other LA bands that tried to kind of do the rock star thing and they're crazy. It's like, you know, Icarus Line, Brian Jonestown Massacre, like both these bands, like, you know, got some attention, but they acted the part almost to a cartoonish degree.
Yeah, yeah.
And now they're just like nothing happened. They fizzled out.
Mm-hmm. So much of that. That's what we were raised on, seeing like, man, that band only made 2 records. What would have happened if they could have kept their shit together a little, you know, what does that, it means a million things, personal relationships and life happening, and so you can't control it, but at the same time, like if you recognize the worth and importance of what you're doing, and you see enough people who are like, dude, that guy works at a clothing store, that guy works at a and it's not to say that there's anything wrong with, you know, whatever job you want to have, but when you know, God, that person is so talented and they were born to be in that band, and now they have to wait to see if there's like a resurgence of interest in their band, or like that band refused. We went and saw them, like, and they had a big, they got lucky enough.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's amazing. But you do have to, it is like these huge personalities, huge talent and brilliant, amazing records. And it's amazing that they get to come back together and perform it, but it's like, if the 4 or 5 of you were in a room, you could say, how could we tone down some of that personality? Well, how can we continue to make another great, great record with a little bit less personal drama, without us all hating each other, without us, you know, having to break, like, and it's not, that's not always, that's not easy to do.
Well, especially because I'd imagine a lot of people will go into something like music because it's an escape, or they're rebelling, or they're rejected, or there's something. And so they take that person. Now, that's just they've been handed a bad set of social skills, and then all, you know, like seemingly all of a sudden now, you know, this sort of world that rejected them is like, we'll do anything you want. Like that's I can't even imagine what that does if you don't have some type of a grounding or center or something.
Yeah,
of course.
And I would never want to hang out with that person.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Everyone
is around them saying yes to them because they got lucky for a moment. You know, it's not going to last for that person.
Right.
And so it's not even really fun to me to think about being that person because it's so temporary. And but then it's like, you know, you also have to be careful because you take the – you can't also, you know, cut out the idea that art is you know, what we do, what everybody does. It's craziness, like, kind of captured in to a certain extent, but it's also you have to be very organized and very deliberate. And it's like – so we walk that line, you know, and I think it's you can't go too far the other way either. You can't be so trying to organize and to where it's almost manipulative and some of the art goes out of the room because you're just so efficient, you know. Right. Can't be that either, but you have to be in between.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, when I think about this sort of the mythos of the burned out rock star, you know, there's, I think in the 70s, it's just funny how everything shifted, that there was a time, I think, where people expected, like, oh, there's so much removed from the rest of humanity.
Yeah.
And now as you know, technology, whatever, is a generational thing, but more and more people have access to just being able to kind of do what they want. And people realize, oh, yeah, if you work hard, you can do this. It's now it's just like, oh, they're dudes. They're like me.
Yeah.
They just happen to be up there. And if you meet people and you're a dick to them, they're like, fuck you. I'm going to write on social media that you're a cock and people are not going to like you because, you know, I kind of like that. People have to be more accountable now than they used to be.
It's great, yeah. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, like, we're fascinated with documentaries of the biggest bands from, you know, like, have you seen that Eagles documentary?
Oh, where they just fucking are not cool at all with any of it?
And it's, in hindsight, it makes, again, it's like, hindsight makes a lot of sense of things, but... yeah, I mean, it couldn't have felt that good to not identify or be able to hang out with any of your fans ever because they think you're a god walking amongst them, you know? And it's like, you know, that is bound to implode. The distance between fan and performer and being so huge and money being made and all that. But we love, like, I think... you know, our band on tour watches so many of these documentaries. We as a culture are so informed by all the glamour and yet all the like so obvious mistakes of so many of these, like, you know, the biggest bands in the world. And it's like, it's again, it's like, it's taken a lot of the magic out there, like behind the music, classic albums. There's a million, every band that you love, you can watch and learn about and almost get to the essence of the moment that made them great and everybody's telling their whole story. But it's you know, there's a downside of it. You know, it's they got to be lost in their moment. They got to say, you know, they're looking back now and saying, yeah, it was crazy, but man, you know, I wouldn't change a thing. And it's like, but what if you
what if you could have that and still keep, you know?
Yeah, what if it wasn't, you know, so much cocaine and underage girls and stupidness that puts you where you are?
I honestly, my manager has a saying, and I love the saying because it applies to everyone at all times. I mean, I'm going to say, obviously, there are circumstances that sometimes people can't control. But in most cases, he'll say, like, if somebody turns out to be a fuck-up or they, you know, like, they don't – something happens, they'll go, people are where they are for a reason. You know, they are where they are for a reason. Yeah. And a lot of times if you – you know, it's like you're saying where you see – you go, wow, that was a really great band or that was a really great comedian. That was a really great – whatever happened. And you start digging a little bit and you're like, oh, they were a crazy asshole they fucking imploded.
Yeah. Did you watch that Mike Myers documentary, The Supermensch?
Oh, yeah.
No. It's great.
Manager who's been a manager of everybody famous at one point or another.
Jimi Hendrix.
Has the great line where he kind of says, like, help me out with this. But he says something to the effect of, like, anybody who is, like, who I work with who is starving to be the most famous person, I know that that's never going to be a good thing for them.
Yeah.
It's more powerful than that.
It's the effect of like fame is the worst thing that could happen.
Yeah.
And
it's like
someone who wants it.
Is basically what we know now in 2015. Like, it's obvious to us to a certain extent. We are the culture that knows that fame, like, or not even fame, but just feeding your own ego.
Fame is basically the asbestos, where it's like, oh yeah, they used to have that everywhere, but then they realized it was killing people, and so it's like that same kind of, like, we had to – there's almost like – oh, it's interesting. I never thought of it this way. There's almost like a social technology that had to evolve. Mm. Like yeah. this is a bad thing spiritually for people
yeah.
that pollutes their – you know, like
we're more aware of the boundaries.
Souls.
Like are right. you, if, and like you said before, it's good that we're accountable. It's good that there's – like that person is just so lost to the world and so into themselves that they're not an interesting artist. And we know the difference between like people who are kind of, you know, milking – the system as it is and like somebody who's trying to make art and you know, I don't know.
Well, I think if you're nice to people and you work hard and you try to be consistent and you try to listen to your audience, then, you know, obviously things can happen that you can't predict that can knock you off, but I honestly think there's not much more to it than that. And because that whole the burned out rock star thing, like a few of them somehow survived.
Yeah.
And it almost makes me think of like, you know, like the baby sea tortoises like scrambling to they're laid in the
yeah.
sand. And
yeah.
So imagine that sand is basically cocaine. And there's like five survived, you know, like yeah. Ozzy lived yeah. and Steven Tyler and yeah, like yeah. And then a couple other people. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, it's funny to me that we, without realizing it, most people hate their older selves. Because you do so many things that you are like, yeah, fuck that guy later. Mm-hmm. That guy's going to have to pay for this shit, but fuck him. I don't really, you know, you're just borrowing against future happiness.
Yeah.
And you really have to, you know, if you can be a little more measured about it, like you can actually have a long life, a long career if you, you know, if you tone it down a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, how do you guys
I also think people love the idea of like, if you're a musician, you're, you know, you're so, or any, you know, any discipline of art that you're so committed that you could never be anything. You could never be successful at anything else, you know, and that that you have to die to every other possibility. But you know, and there's a little bit of truth to it, but that that you don't. Yeah, I don't know. You don't want somebody to be useless in every other way. You know, that person has nothing to say to you. They have nothing like because their ability to look in themselves and have some substances, like just the odds are lower that they're going to be able to give
something. They will
good.
Not do well in an apocalypse.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I could write a song about this apocalypse. You're dead weight.
There's a story about Bernie Mac's funeral. Whereas all these comedians and all these kind of famous people came and a bunch of people talked. It was just about like the whole thing was just all of his friends talking. And no one ever really mentioned that he was a great comedian. Everyone talked about how he was just a good dude. He's sure. a good friend, good kid. Yeah. You know. Yeah, because yeah. it's like in the end, that's what's going to be more important than any of that other stuff.
Yeah.
So like,
I mean, you care about your legacy or how people will think of you. But then it's like. Yeah, you know, it's...
But even those people will die.
You guys were doing... I mean, did both of you guys do the Ethan Hawke interview?
I was bummed.
That was great.
He was great.
So awesome. But yeah. It just made me think of, you know, his brain is just on seven levels at all time, and he's such a zenned out guru.
It's got to be
kind of
to remember all that dialogue, all that yeah. Linklater one-shot
yes.
paragraphs.
I mean, he is... born to be a Richard Linklater character in the way, yeah. that he just riffs and then whoa, I got to tell you about this one more thing how in the way that all of our minds the way that we're thinking but he his the way that he's thinking about being remembered and you know just how a great movie you know it at the end of the day you all come back to just like yeah you know you're just a dude it all ends the same way and
right.
I don't know I like that. Musicians don't have that enough. Actors can tell a longer story in a way than musicians can, I think.
Well, I don't know. I think most actors probably spend more time alone in their heads, you know? I mean, it just the concept of making a movie sounds so awful to me, of being like, you know, that you're basically working for probably a total of 30 actual minutes of work out of the 12 hours that you're just sitting there occupying, you know, just like in a trailer somewhere.
I always wonder about that.
I mean, how could you not go crazy, yeah. like with that kind of weird isolation?
But that's up to the person to be in the trailer. It's, you know, like any set, as you know, is like tons of people around.
Gross, Jonah, and having to talk to them and hear about their problems. Like, I mean, oh my God, it's happening.
That's always my favorite thing about acting is that, like, it's just a big, like, you know, there's tons of people. You can just walk from one person to the next, just having conversations with all these people that just like it's just a bunch of professional shit shooters, mm-hmm. you know. It's just everyone's there just to hang out.
You can always tell, like, there are people in. I guess I see this more than acting than I do music. I think, you know, music is a little trickier because I think it's a there's definitely more of like people have to like the music that you're playing, mm-hmm. but. You know, you see people and they can be in like failed movie after failed movie, but they keep working, or failed TV show. And then you find out it's like, oh, because they're awesome and people like mm-hmm. working with them. And it doesn't, you know, like there really is something to that, especially, you know, the people jump onto different productions. They, oh, you should work with this guy because he's really, like, the word of mouth stuff really does. It is a for real thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's yeah. funny.
I'm surprised there's not like a Yelp for performers where like people who work in different venues.
As far as we know, this guy
was a dick. Yeah, I'm sure there's definitely word of mouth, but you know, but yeah. some type of a rating system where like don't let this band into your venue. How do you guys what else would you do, like, if you know saying like, well, you know, it's good to have other skill sets, like, what is there anything
else
you
would want?
Well,
when we started, Moss was working at a clothing company called Ever, and designing stuff.
I didn't know that.
I designed all our t-shirts, their website, anything that had, like, you know,
had the leaves on it.
Yeah.
I loved that clothing. Oh, that was great.
I still wear those shirts all the time. I got a million of them.
I was doing substitute teaching. We lived in a house together in Whittier with our friend becoming manager, Brett, and we just didn't have a clue about anything. We didn't really know anything about how any kind of music industry worked, how even touring.
Well, how did you
worked.
Break in then? Because I would imagine most people starting bands are probably that.
We started playing our friends like parties and stuff, and like just house parties, and like you said, our manager lived with us, and he wanted a manager. So we're like, we don't need a manager. We don't even have a drummer yet. And so like, why? But we're like, yeah, get a sidekick and do that, you know. And he did. And
time.
He started getting us, you know, shows here and there, like small things, and then at one point we recorded. You know, I remember doing a bunch of favors for like graphic design favors for this guy, and he let us record like our first EP. This guy Matt Wignall in his garage, and he recorded it and like in one day, started sending that off to blogs, and blogs would write about you. And that was
a moment in time too, where like
I didn't even know about music blogs back then, but our manager's like, yeah, we got sent to blogs. I'm like, okay, cool.
What year was this, like 05 maybe?
Yeah. 04, 05. We started playing late 04, and then our first show is like early 05.
So what sites is that at that point? Like Pitchfork, Brooklyn Vegan,
like Stereo Gum. One of them.
Oh man, there's
Gorilla versus Bear.
Yeah, Gorilla versus Bear. That was one. I had a friend named Doug, and he said, hey man, I read about you guys on Gorilla versus Bear. And he said, what is that? Like, we're completely like at the time late on all internet curve, and we're like, oh, we should print CDs and send them, you know, send them to other ones, and that was a really important moment for us to having, you know, where we watched it happen, like online. People, imagine a moment where you could send a physical CD to a blog who is basically just, I mean, I imagine a guy working a regular job and starting his blog and getting a CD in the mail and going like, oh, like he feels good because he's like, man, yeah, I'm starting to, because
that's him doing it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he writes a review, and we saw it, we felt it, right? You know, on tour, we toured for probably 3 years, a year before our first record came out, and 2 years after. You know, just like it was a time when we just said yes to everything, and we were on tour forever, and that was definitely one thing that helped a lot.
I heard about you guys from I think maybe in I don't know, maybe 2008. By a guy, I had this friends in this band, in a band called Bad Veins, and they were a Cincinnati band, which Cincinnati has a great art music scene, shit. At least from what I remember.
Yeah.
And it, like, he was one of these guys that if he said something, I'm like, oh yeah, that's probably a cool thing, because that, you know, like, you have friends who just like cool stuff, mm-hmm. and Jonah's one of those guys. Jonah likes cool stuff.
Yeah, I'm okay.
Ah, you're all right. Yeah. And so it was a complete like word of mouth back then. You got to listen to this band. You got to listen to this band.
No, we still do that though. You and I, we still like swap music and stuff like that. It's still, when you really break it down, as far as like any blogs or any websites or, you know, Pitchfork or any Spotify or, like, you know, Pandora accidentally come upon. I think it's like it really – most music, I think, still is just word of mouth and just people – you know, they one person can maybe find out about it because of one of those venues, but it's more just like, you know, you know what your friend's like. You're always like – a person is always going to be the best, you know, arbitrator of like what –
And then you can pirate your stuff.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm going to make sure that people start using that. You get credit for it.
Yeah, yeah.
You designed that word. That's a good one.
I'll give you my email. Yeah.
Pirate. But
this is like the day Napster was invented.
Yeah, yeah.
Pivotal.
I think we have about the same type of business model, that type of plan. I don't know. A bunch of people will go there. That's got to be worth something.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? Then what happens? Are you guys cool with the, you know, if people are like, yeah, I had to is it more important for you just to have your music in as many ears as possible?
Yeah, again, like there's the time that we came into all this. I feel like I never had an ounce of like, ugh, you didn't buy our CD. You know, like we were right after anybody who might have thought that way, mm-hmm. I think.
It doesn't seem like it was that long ago where that fight happened, but it really was. Like when I'm looking back and I was like, oh, that's 14, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Right about the hump when people, you know, it's like with all the sharing, it's like the LimeWires and Napsters of the world.
I was working at a record store in Venice Beach. It was brutal. People coming in, and like, they didn't know it was a bad thing to say to a small business.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, what came out this week? No, oh, this. And they go, cool. Do you want to buy it? No, I just want to know what to download. Why'd you tell me that?
Yeah. That's the best. But then it's so weird. I was... our manager who lives in Eagle Rock was just telling me about the record store in Highland Park, Permanent. Gimme Gimme Records.
Oh, Gimme Gimme. They just moved over to Figueroa.
Right. To a bigger location.
Yeah.
Who could explain that? A record store that's doing so well that they need to move to a mom and pop neighborhood record store. Oh, man, we're doing too good.
You know what?
We got to move.
But
it's like,
and that's
like
the
best. Neighborhood with already three record stores. There's Permanent Records, Wombleton, and now there's Gimme Gimme.
So there are two things that I think make that happen. Number one, I don't think people want to steal everything by and large. I think they want to sample things for free.
Mm-hmm.
But I think once someone is a fan of something, I do believe that there is a basic communal human thing of, I am getting this from you. I want to give you something back. Whether it's money
something,
or whether
somehow.
People are I knitted a blanket with your band name on it. Like, they just want to give something back. I really do feel like
this podcast is free, and so when we go and do live shows, you people are just like, I needed to give you something because you just give us stuff for free. Like,
yeah, I think
they want an exchange.
Yeah. That's part of. I think that's why I don't think people want to steal stuff forever. And the other thing is that, you know, there may not be a million record stores, but I think people still want that in life communal tactile experience. There's still something special about, mm-hmm. you know, the smell of a store and the way new stuff smells and being around people, and it's like really communing as opposed to just, I don't think we're as lazy and cheap as, you know, we sort of accuse everyone of being. I think people really still want human experiences.
Yeah, mm-hmm. definitely.
And the kids are into it. The kids, like a buddy of mine, his daughter asked for a record player and records for Christmas. And like she like got the stuff, and she didn't. She knew she wanted it, but she didn't know how to use it.
Mm-hmm.
So he had to teach her how. And then they gave her a gift certificate to Amoeba, and she went. And, you know, he taught her how to hold the record. And I think kids are kind of getting back into a more tactile thing because of so much of their life being kind of this in screen experience.
It's also kind of retro, so it sort of makes it it makes it kind of cool. Like, this is how. Although I don't remember as a kid ever being like, I want a reel to reel in my house, but. Well, I guess a cassette's a tiny reel-to-reel. That's why are cassettes back? Why? Can you?
They're
why?
Cheap. They're cheap.
I
and
love
bands
cassettes.
Can just sell
do you really?
I had a 2004 Volvo. I just got. I had to. It died on me, but it was the last Volvo with a tape deck, and I'm so bummed. Now I have not a tape deck, but.
But we're
so
you know
loved
we're
it.
Both 35. I think is that right? We're
I think so. Yeah.
And I think we're both definitely older than the majority. Where you know you. There's a record store called Rockaway that's in Silver Lake. Do you know that place?
Yeah, I go there all the time. I'm a member.
What does it mean to be a
I
member?
You get like a little discount if you spend over a certain amount of money as a member.
I didn't know you could become a member.
They have so much kitschy stuff, just rock memorabilia, and
they feel like
and
an old
records
record store,
and CDs,
yeah.
and You know, Moss has always been of the opinion, like, you're a CD proud guy. You know, all of our friends got rid of all their CDs at one point. But I think, yeah, you know, it's weird. I went into Amoeba before I came over here. I think to be amongst, like, to walk into a jazz section of a record store and just, oh man, so much I don't know, so much, you know, and like, even when starting the band, we would, you know, you're just like, yeah, you know, nothing new. This is what everyone's saying, but just, you know, you're amongst covers and, you know, places that records were made and engineers and people who played on them. And it's so exciting to be a part of that culture that, you know, in some ways is lost, but you cannot be bitter about the way that it's lost. There's no way that record buying will ever, you know, become the norm.
No,
but
no.
At the same time, you know, walking into Amoeba right now, it's packed.
Packed.
It's crazy.
And I think Pirates Pressing, it's one of the bigger pressing plants in the States, announced that there's no more new clients. Like, they're backed up for a couple years now, and they're starting to build a new factory.
Well, as a consumer, as a fan of something, you just appreciate stuff more when you have to work for it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
If it's, you know, like that idea of, you know, sending a CD to a blog, it's so different than just emailing a song. Like, all right, I'll get it. Like,
yeah.
But when you actually take something out and experience it, or you have to go purchase it and come back, I think you're a little more open to appreciating the experience because you had to work for it a little bit.
Yeah.
That's why I don't like people that use Discogs for record shopping. I think it takes away most of the fun of record shopping.
Mm-hmm.
It's like just going like, I want to get that. Oh, I'll find it online and I'll buy it.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to the fun of going to a store, talking with the guy there. Yeah. It's like, do you have this? Oh, I don't know. And then flipping through. And then when you're doing that, you're going to find something else you didn't realize you were looking
for. When I was in college, I can't remember what the record store was, but I went to UCLA and
Rhino?
It wasn't Rhino. No.
Aaron's?
What?
Aaron's?
Maybe it was.
All right, Aaron's.
There was a machine in there. This was revolutionary, that basically made mixed cassette tapes, and you would go in and pick the songs you wanted, and it would record. I'm positive I didn't dream this. And it would record them all, like, onto the cassette really fast.
That sounds awesome.
It would record at high speed, and then, you know, obviously, you know, it would play back at normal speed. But you basically would create your own mixtape in a machine right there. It was so much fun.
It's rad.
Yeah, but how do you put in samples from movies and make it so specific?
We didn't have the technology in those days.
Yeah.
Actually, I was friends with a kid who's had way too much money, and. Because when you're in college, like, if he's the one friend I had that lived in his own apartment, which was crazy, and it was in a really nice building, and he had all this mixing equipment, and he would do that. He would make mixes and then, like, drop, like, movie quotes and stuff in the middle, and it fucking blew my mind. And one of the saddest days of my life, I had that fucking mixtape for, like, 6 years, and I left it in my shorts pocket and washed it.
Oh.
And so I took him, and I'm like, no! It's gone forever. And it actually, being spoiled now and kind of assuming, like, hey, you can get whatever you want on the internet. The internet has everything, or you can find it. I will never, ever, ever get that mixtape back.
Isn't it amazing how special that is?
It really was. I think we should start trying to.
I got Richard Swift, our friend Richard. He made us some mixtapes, and I made sure that I put them on MP3 because they're going to go away
eventually.
Yeah, and there's some vibes on there too.
But yeah, and so you can't ever worry about how music will be consumed in as far as, like, as a maker of it. You can't. There are people who do that. Like, I don't know. It's like, who's going to hear it? When you ask yourself that far down the line, you know, it makes you say, well, I'm going to wait. You know, for the record label to, you know, figure out how to get it out there in this way that is ideal. And in the same way for you guys, imagine if you're kind of like, we're going to wait for a little more leverage with this podcast, and you can never wait.
And if you do, you're doing it for the wrong reasons. If you say, like, you know, if you cut it off before you even do it, go, well, who's going to listen? No one's going to listen to this. Like, well, then you're not doing it for the right reason. You should be doing it because you like doing it.
Yeah.
And someone will hear it, you know? Yeah.
It's a form. It's a different forms. It doesn't really matter that much. When people get so caught up in where's the music industry going? Ah, you know, it becomes like such an epic conversation, and it seems like the stakes are so high. It's like, don't think that way.
Well, I'll tell you where it's definitely
it's
going.
Just a form.
People will continue to play music.
Yeah.
You know that's going to happen. So fucking perfect your craft and get good at it and enjoy it. And then the other stuff will sort itself out.
Yeah, if business is getting in the way of you creating art, then maybe you shouldn't be creating art.
And think about, like, making a movie and it could be a great success that it's viewed in a few theaters and then it's over and then maybe it comes out on DVD and people that, like, I'm thinking about people, the ways that you can put an enormous amount of energy into something that has a limited ability to consume or see or hear it or whatever. And like, musicians, you know, even if very few people buy a CD, like, no one's going to buy a CD. If people listen to it online, and it's like, you know, you ask the question, what's it all about? What is it all about to have your art go into the world? It's an impossible question. You know, you hope that it's meaningful to people and that you can go on and continue to do it. And I think, like, to be of that kind of, I don't know, mature frame of mind or something is really hard, I think, especially for musicians. I think if you're a film director, I listened to the WTF podcast with Mark Maron interviewing P.T. Anderson.
I'm not familiar with that one. Is that another?
It's also further down the rung of podcasts.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Them talking about his first films. Yeah, I think it's you have to be in it for the long haul,
sure.
I guess is what it is. And
Ultimately, if you, as long as you make stuff that you're enjoying, it doesn't. I mean, I would tend to guess that, you know, so many things pop in unconventional ways.
Yeah,
you can't know how many things fail. You know, going down the, well, this is the tried and true path. Like, it doesn't matter if your stuff's good and it connects with people, they'll find it. They'll figure it out. If you just make a CD, then someone will rip it onto something else and they'll pass it around. And like, it doesn't, you shouldn't be held up by, and I think in a lot of cases, those are excuses for people because they're afraid of failure. They're afraid of looking dumb. They're afraid of not. And it's like, well, you know, sometimes you're going to look dumb. Sometimes you're not going to look dumb. It doesn't matter. Just try to learn from it and move on.
And be about something bigger. You know, I think that's a hard, you have to kind of, you know, maybe know yourself or know the stuff that drives you. And usually it's deeper stuff, whether, you know, like, I don't know. You can't base your success on anything tangible, whether, you know, I don't know how you guys started, but I feel like, you're probably interviewing your friends at first, and then those friends maybe got to be there. The range of people you could choose to interview is probably that they became.
That's
more
actually how.
Famous.
Yeah, that's literally how. That's how it happened, and that's how I think all the podcasts started. Was, oh, we're just sort of talking to our friends, and our friends are guests, and then, I mean, I remember very distinctly. It was probably about. It was a while before someone came on that I didn't know. Huh. And it was like, whoa, this is like a real, oh wait, this is like a show now. Like before it was just fucking around. I think that person might've been Ozzy. Like I did something for someone. And they're like, will you host this Q&A with Ozzy? And I was like, well, can I have the unedited audio and make it a podcast? And they said, sure. Cause they were going to only use like 5 minutes of it.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I didn't, and it was the first time I was like, I don't know him. I've never met him. I don't know what this is going to be. I don't know what this is going to be like. And it was just a weird accident.
Podcasts are an amazing forum for totally raw and unedited conversations of people's thoughts unfiltered.
Well, we're going,
like,
to chop this down to about 6 minutes.
Good, 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 good.
Mostly us.
Soundbites, a couple songs. Joan and I talk about how much we know about everything, and then yeah, we'll fit you guys in there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Plug the record. We'll plug the record.
Oh, I don't know if we're going to.
It's going to be bad music, if that's okay.
Yeah.
Sure, sure.
Who's your favorite band? Because we're going to put that underneath.
Yeah.
And
good, good, good.
Handsome Family.
The Handsome Family.
But yeah, it's amazing. I mean, people will listen to, like, no one listens to. Very few people listen to an album, 30 to 40 minutes of it, but people will listen to 2 hours of a podcast straight through on a long walk because they're getting something really profound and, you know, just...
We know listening to a full album is emotionally challenging to people.
Yeah.
And it's funny that people, and I'm guilty of it, you spend more time debating whether or not you want to invest time in something and energy than if you would just... listen to it and experience it for yourself. We're like, we're so scared now of, you know, doing of taking chances on things emotionally. We're like, oh, I don't know, I may not like this, it may not be good. We're like, well, what if you just tried it? And if you don't like it, then you know you don't like it, and that helps further give you a sense of who you are. Like, I feel like we more need to look at life as a collection of experiences that tell us who we are, rather than I have to like everything. Like, we're so much in a in a genius playlist fucking mindset where it's like, I gotta like everything that I... No, you don't.
Bring me what I desire.
Yeah, no, you cannot like things, and that tells you just as much about yourself as something that you like. Why not just try to experience different things?
Yeah.
We're dicks.
But we're assaulted. We're assaulted with information where you have so much access to so much that, you know, you... In some ways, you are defined by what you don't like as much as what you like. You know, I don't know. Heady.
What was the last thing that you kind of took a chance on that you were like, I don't know if I'm going to like this, and then it turned out to be something that you thought was amazing?
I was looking at a I don't know how I came across this even, but there's a record label. It's called Superior Viaduct that reissues records. I'm looking over here because, like, this guy seems to know stuff about
stuff. Sounds like
stuff.
Light in the Attic, that kind of stuff?
Yes, exactly like that. Reissues records. There's a band called Flesh Eaters, which is a 80s punk band that, like, played this record, this lineup, 10 times, and they just played at the Echo the other night. Moss and I had another friend who we didn't even know was going. But it's like... Raddest record, A Minute to Price, A Second to Die, and one guy's a member of X. But, like, this record's so insane, and I – how did I even come across it? Probably because this group of people had a reissue. They have a crime record and a gun club record and an 80s punk band, L.A. stuff.
Is it all just L.A.?
No, it's all over the place, and they have Alice Coltrane's first record they reissued. Oh, wow. It's like just a cool, and this speaks to this whole conversation, like, to look at this website and see this, you know, tiny in the scheme of things record label that is like has great taste. At the end of the day, there's no common thing in genre or location or anything other than like real narrow vision, great taste. And it's like, wow, that appeals to me. That's
We should find – this would be the kind of thing where maybe Katie or Kyle, someone just like pull links to this stuff, because people will always go, what was that thing that was mentioned in the podcast that I didn't know?
That one is called Superior Viaduct.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't know.
As we're I think that's about – we've been in like an hour. But
I drink a lot of water too.
Yep.
Yeah.
Drink a lot of.
I drink a lot.
Oh,
of water.
Oh, you drink a lot of water.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you feel hydrated?
No, that bathroom's calling me.
Oh, okay.
Oh. Yeah.
So before you,
well,
I got about 1 minute in me until
of
I run
long
out of here.
Tale. Yeah. One time I was living under a waterfall.
Did you hear that new D'Angelo record?
Yeah.
I was just listening to that today. That's
Black
one
Messiah?
That wasn't really like a take a chance on. Actually, now that I think about it, that was more like, I'm probably gonna love this.
You did,
but that's insane.
Like on New Year's Day it was before Christmas. Right?
It was before Christmas that he kind of surprised put it out, I guess.
I have this weird thing where, and it's ever since I was a kid, for some reason, I always really like the eighth track on an album. And it's not that I'm trying to like the eighth track on an album, but every time the eighth track on your new album, it's got Home in the title.
Hold My Home. Yeah.
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 And I was like, I wonder. I'm like, fuck yeah. Like, I don't know what it is.
That's my favorite song.
Are you deeming, are you destining, predestining that to be true?
I don't know. But I think it's maybe when you're, and this is just my stupid, this is much more new agey than I actually am. But I almost kind of wonder if in the story arc of an album, you're, you know, 10 or 12 or 14 tracks or whatever, that's just
the third act.
It is kind of like that part, so that subconsciously when you're laying out all the songs, you're like, oh, this makes the most sense here in number eight position. For some reason, it always, the eighth song almost always resonates with
me. My buddy Matt, every time he would show me an album, would always skip the first song. He's like, oh, you got to check out this album.
I'm
skip the first song. He'd be like, why do you always do that?
It's brutal. All,
it's when it gets going.
I will say that whenever, for doing track listing for records, for doing live sets,
you gotta pee it up.
Which is, you know, you do a track listing, that takes, you know, a certain amount of time. But when you make a set list every single night, it's always about the eighth song part of the set list that's like, ugh, okay, you know, we you know, bringing it down, and then it kind of... Eight is where you either kind of bring it down some for a few or keep it up. It's a hard place. You know, pretty much 1-7 is a more obvious what to do with it. Eight,
yeah, because the crowd's been there for a little while. It's like you gotta, like, what – and it definitely has to be sort of a response to everything else that's around it in order to carry people to the end. I think it'd be fun if people in the comment threads or on Twitter – let's start a hashtag called Eight Songs – and just put your favorite eighth track of – not your favorite eight track. Your favorite eighth track of an album. I think that'd be a, I think that'd be kind of a fun playlist.
I'm just going to go home and start going through stuff.
Tell me if you think – because you know, maybe that's just because it, that's my emotional state. Like other people might like the fourth bit, but I just – I've always liked the eighth track. What is it – this is my last question for you is you sing in such a high register. How do you not blow your fucking vocal cords out?
I'm wrestling with it right now. I wrestle with it a lot of the time. As we were talking about before, I realized late in the game here that I've got allergies. But then I also, like smoking and drinking is never helpful for
that. Does not help that stuff.
I'm getting to the point now where it's just like, you know, even today, I was debating, like, man, you know what? I should try to not drink on this whole tour. But it
dehydrates
and then, but now here I am with a bottle of wine just at the podcast. Yeah. We're not even playing a show.
If you want to see what can happen to a person's voice, listen to early Joni Mitchell and then later Joni Mitchell. Because it's, I mean, and her voice.
But she's not shy. I mean, she's like a, you know, she has a beautiful voice. Like
she has an amazing voice, but like
I'm a shouter.
Like, chain smoking.
Oh yeah,
like
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like she's had this. She used to have this really high register voice, and the later stuff is all down. I mean, she still sounds amazing.
Yeah,
I love Joni Mitchell, but you can definitely hear like, oh, that can happen to your.
I always think it's like, yeah, you hear people say like, yeah, this, you know, he's this guy's 31 and he's, but he's got that Tom Waits, you know, smoking and drinking. And you're like, oh God, that's so dumb. You can't go, if you get that naturally, fine, but you can't go back to having a nice, a nice, true to yourself.
And you don't want, in 20 years, you don't want to be like, hey, me out to dry. Like, you don't want to have to do like a jazzy riff of it because you can't.
Or if you already have that voice naturally.
Hey, drop it a key, boys.
Or you can always hear like when a singer, like when an older singer, it's like, oh, they used to go up. Now they drop to the
minute,
they went
the minute
down.
Your fans are watching for that stuff, you're really in trouble. No, it's true. I like, you know, I remember being at South by Southwest probably the first time that we were there and we had played so many shows leading up to it and I had no voice. I do think that there is something just primal that kicks in where I literally can be walking around all day and have not even the ability to speak and just you know, like ordering food or whatever and just be miserable, be so bummed, like, man, this show's gonna suck, I'm gonna sing terrible, and then you know, and you push it all out and it hopefully opens up and you can sing. But I remember being at South by Southwest, I think the first year, and being in that place of being so brutally blown out, having no voice, and somebody was like, here, like, you know, you just got to chew on this ginger root, you know, it's like a big piece of ginger, and I was just... like an apple, just eating it, and it was like, but nothing works. Nothing ever works. I for the first time went to an ear, nose, throat doctor, and like, you know, she gave me these like steroid pills that like for a week was like, yeah, I'm all better. This is awesome. And then was like, she was like, no, I can't keep you on those.
Oh, you can't.
You're gonna get bloated. You're gonna get, you know, and you're gonna eat.
And also
and
does
it's terrible
real,
for
real
you.
Damage because yeah. You're yeah. It's not. It doesn't. Your cords are still fucked up. It's just that the steroids kind of help mask that a little bit.
Yeah.
So you're just doing horrible damage to them.
I always think how much smarter I would be if I were to sing in a very medium register and every future recording and how much better long term that would be. But, you know, of course it's about like it's this – that's where I feel good and I like, you know, at the end of the day I feel like it's – you know, you want to – cut through and for whatever reason that high register makes me think of like a kind of like some kind of James Brown, like, you know, I'd rather like kind of punch with the vocal than be super melodic with it, I
yeah.
guess.
Yeah, then get to the point where, like, you know, like Sinatra later in life, where he was basically just talking. Metered talking. This is how I normally talk, and I'm smoking fucking broads. Like,
don't,
it's
don't be
yeah, don't yeah. be don't. But
there's longevity in that.
There
That's
is.
Nice.
Well, it's nice. So then at that point, it can be kind of a kitschy thing. Like, hey, I'm doing this on purpose.
Hey, yeah.
But there's a stuff. You know, voiceover actors have a lot of good secrets for that. For throat stuff. Apple cider vinegar is
that's
very
good.
And then
should be gurgling. Should be doing vocal warm-ups.
There's this Korean stuff, and I can't remember what it's called. But a friend of mine refers to it as Hulk juice because it like. You take a shot. It's not alcoholic, but it's a some type of Korean herbal juice, and it supposedly like completely coats your throat and makes it.
George
like,
Carlin would he said he learned it from an opera singer, or when he started to lose his voice, he would drink room temperature flat Coca-Cola, and it was like a quick fix, or just kind of the syrup would just kind of coat and help out and be kind of a temporary thing.
I heard that Amy Grant would eat potato chips.
Really?
What would Kurt Cobain be doing if he was still singing right now?
Well,
what would he be singing
Dave
like?
Dave Grohl's voice still.
Yeah, God, he's everything is the end of it. Zappa, 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 yeah.
In between every song.
Man.
I'm so glad to hear about the Amy Grant thing, though, because I was wondering how night after night she'd get on stage and go,
baby, baby, I'm chicken brother.
I think my mom told me that, so she'll be happy to know that we riffed on the Amy Grant tip.
Well, I think finally we've blown the lid off the Amy Grant enigma, too. Like, how does she continue
night after night?
Night after night.
Stop for, excuse me.
Hitting those impossible notes. Yeah.
Baby, I'm so glad you're mine.
Macy Gray shattered Tom Waits CDs. That's
what she does. In a restaurant, my friend April and I were performing in Vancouver, and we went to this Vietnamese restaurant. And for some reason, they had on – it was a really annoying station of just kind of annoying covers of songs.
Coffee House.
And it might have been. It
Vino Volo Airports also and have that.
Who does?
Schwartz.
Oh, they do. Just there's some – like there's a certain type of singer that does that like – I'm an anachronism. Like they sing purposely, like that from
I'm
the
necromancer.
No, that'd be better. I said an anachronism.
Oh, sorry.
I'm a necromancer. No, but it's just that kind of like Macy Gray
Bob
sort
Dylan
of a thing.
Cover.
But they add a little bit of the 30s, like la, 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 I'm singing my songs. Yeah. Like that's like come the fuck.
Electric time machine.
Yeah, exactly. Not on board for that. Not on board for that.
Yeah, it's
unless
it's
you either have to commit to it all the way and be like, I'm doing a ragtime Leon Redbone
that
thing.
That takes us back to Mr. Belvedere.
That takes us back to Mr. Belvedere.
Yeah, you don't want
to
touch that.
That I feel like that reference was the Mr. Belvedere of the podcast. It sort of came in and rescued the family, Wesley. Whose story is it? Who was it? Patton? Who has the story about Christopher? What's his name? Hutchins. Anyway, that Mr. Belvedere actor sitting on his own balls.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, man.
And they did an impression. Maybe it was Paul F. Tompkins. But they would do an impression on stage of him sitting on his own balls. No, I think it was Patton. And the whole impression was just, oh! I don't know why.
Two for dinner?
I wish that Christopher Hitchens got to play Mr. Belvedere for a while. Do you Remember that guy? He was a
who is that?
Enormous writer and Vanity Fair writer and big like atheist.
Oh, right, intellectual.
He would have been a great Mr. Belvedere.
He would have been a great Mr. Belvedere.
Yeah, he would have just reamed everyone.
Wesley, there's no point to anything.
Yeah.
What?
God doesn't exist.
Oh, I guess I will cheat on that
this
exam.
This is class. Everything is just a class struggle.
I guess Bob Uecker can cheat on the wife. I don't know. The whole Bob Uecker, the star of a sitcom.
Where did he come from?
Oh, man, that was a long pause.
He was a baseball player.
Okay.
He was a baseball player, and then he did, like, sports announcery stuff, and then he was in
Major
League. Just a bit outside from Major League.
Yeah.
How dare you?
That's he right.
Make me feel
league.
Older.
He was a pitcher. I think he was a pitcher, I think.
But he was a sports guy that was funny, and then they just put him in stuff. Well, you guys have a lot of Mr. Belvedere to catch up on the road, because it holds up.
I'm going to rip it all. I'm going to buy it.
If we're going to learn how to play that, man, we're going to have to learn seventh chords.
I'm telling
major
you,
sevenths,
just
minor
out of,
sevenths.
Please, as a favor, just out of nowhere, just launch it. One show, just do the Mr. Belvedere theme. One show. Just do it. Don't explain it.
That one, piano intro. Man.
One time we walked out to the Seinfeld bass. One time.
That's great.
Never do that again, though.
Oh. Well, yeah, you got to move on to Belvedere.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you guys for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
You know, like those stuck up asshole bands that we were talking about? They drink Belvedere. You guys will play Belvedere. That's
man. I hope someone gets it.
Come back, Jonah. Don't you fucking leave me here. How dare you? Leave me hanging. Too dry. Hang me.
Too easy.
Bye.
Brutal.
How much is he going to commit to the bit? He really committed.
He's in the parking lot. Yeah.
He's actually gone. All right. Now we're going to play the song. Now the songs are going to play.
Oh, great.
Now I feel like we should intro them.
Oh, we did. This is two songs that we played right before we started talking. First, and All This Could Be Yours. Piano, guitar, accompaniment to the vocals.
Here's Cold War Kids on the Nerdist Podcast. Sessions tracks. I don't know why I always feel like I have to go into like an NPR voice.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go.
All the same, who could compare? First you lose trust, then you get worried. Night after night, bar after club, dropping like flies, who woke you up on the front lawn? Sprinklers turned up, it's not your house, where'd you go wrong? First you get hurt, then you feel sorry. Flying like a cannonball, short life, turn it around, it'll rewrite, call it a dark night of the soul, the ticking of clocks, gravity's pull. First you get close, and you get worried, flying like a cannonball, falling into the earth, heavy as a feather when you hit the dirt, how am I the lucky one, I did not deserve, wait around forever when you get close and you get worried. Going silent, a silent treatment. It's not inviting now. And don't deny what you meant. You get excited, you get excited. You got a feeling, or at least you can pretend. You wanna light it, you wanna light it, you wanna light it now. The candle from both ends. You get excited, you get excited. Wait around forever when you were there first. you get close and you get worried. You want to light it, light the candle from both ends. First you get close and you get worried. You want to light it, light the candle from both ends. You want to light it, you want to light it. You want to light it, light the candle from both ends. You want to light it, you want to light it. You want to light it now, the candle from both ends.
Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
For more than two centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history. Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now in hardcover or digital editions wherever you get your books.